Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Education for Climate Talks. I'm very happy today to have with me Matthew Pye. Hello, Matthew. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, great. Thanks.
So let me present you, Matthew, before we start. You're a philosophy teacher. We can see that behind you quite clearly. And you're also the founder of the Climate Academy. And that's what we're going to talk about today. You're also an author. You wrote a few books on the climate crisis, of course.
Yeah.
And you were working in the European school system, where you are in Brussels, in one of the schools in Brussels, a philosophy teacher. So you founded in 2011 that amazing, how could I say, education initiative, education program, which is called Climate yeah. Academy. The title is quite telling. You're trying with climate, and I think you're not trying, you managed to do it, to promote systemic understanding of sustainability and of climate change for mostly senior secondary school students, but also for schools. But I stop here because you're going to explain that much better than me. I leave you the floor. So what's the Climate Academy precisely? Why did you founded that or felt the need to create such a thing, and how does it work, please?
Yeah, thank you for all those kind words. So what happened to me in 2011 was I went to a talk and I didn't know about this. I was green, you know, I kind of bought bio apples and tried to recycle, blah blah blah. But I didn't really understand the depth or the scope of the sustainability crisis. I went to a talk in the evening by chance, and then it was like a brain melt. So, like, first of all, my goodness, this is a massive crisis. And then secondly, the shock was, but I only found out by chance. And that shouldn't be the case as an adult. So that's the start of the Climate Academy. So the idea essentially is to bring students' understanding of the systemic crisis and sustainability, it's a systemic crisis, to a systems level. Because what tends to happen in schools is you do a great job in primary, sensitizing them to the importance of the environment, engaging them in individual actions and things like that. And then when it gets to secondary, we kind of stop. It becomes fragmented. And we tend to repeat the same things about, you know, it's getting hotter, blah, blah, blah. And we don't advance their understanding. So just like we do in maths or in chemistry or in all the other subjects, we take them to close to university level to prepare them for a full education or deep education. And the environment just gets stuck in second gear, recycling basically thoughts about recycling. That's the bit. So schools to me seem to have a kind of fetish, an odd fetish about plastics, plastic waste and recycling, and not systems view and not systems thing. So it's an attempt to sort of fulfill that kind of engagement, that energy that primary school children have with the environment that gets lost in teenage. You can actually see it in the Price et al. Paper. It's a research paper about environmental engagement. It just drops off a cliff when they get into secondary school. So it's an attempt to put that right.
Precisely, so climate education is very much about competences, of course. I mean, what you're trying to do is certainly to give them knowledge so that they understand better. But not only that, it's also about behaving. As future citizens, and also to get some skills, I mean, as future professionals. So let's focus on that for a moment, because I was having that conversation recently with a good friend of mine, and he was explaining how research is showing that even if you green a curriculum, that does not mean that at the end of the day, you will have, you know, really strengthened the competences of the learners. So that's what we want to do, right, Matthew? So can we focus on that for a moment and explain how the Climate Academy is promoting competences for the learners?
Yeah. So the Green Comp Framework is absolutely fantastic document. And what that does is it articulates the deeper green skills which have to be in play for us to be truly doing green education. And those are things like engaging in complexity, political agency, problem framing, and you can't get to those things. You can't access those skills if you're not in the first place doing systems level understanding. So I'm going to just return for a moment to the first, because the Climate Academy, we have three pillars: systems understanding, civic engagement, and then systems entrepreneurship. Those are the three pillars. But you've got to really always start at the first pillar, because until you give the students a systems view of the problems, their civic engagement is always going to be very limited, because they're only ever going to think inside cultural cliches. They're only going to ever think and act inside that. So this may be the philosopher in me. You've got to first open the brain up to see where the hidden and camouflaged levels of inadequacy are, because people quickly feel that they're doing a good job with green education. So you've got to break that first, that we're just not doing enough. So the first pillar is systems education. And once that's in place, you then get students acting in a way which is systems informed, and it's much more powerful. But first, you've got to get the understanding right. So just like, if you go back to those competences, one of the key competences in the Green Comp framework is problem framing. Now, the way in which, if this is a general summary, but the way in which the climate crisis is framed is often in individual actions. That's actually been funded by British Petroleum. They're the ones that endorsed that phrase and gave it a lot. So that whole framing of the problem is actually fossil fuel framing. And to expose the limits of that, to expose the fact that the individual is, that's one example of that task. Another one is like the green transition. People talk about the green transition, but it's not happening. This is the teacher in me, I prepared some bits of paper. And this is just a way you can deconstruct, what do we mean by the green transition? Because people talk about, we need the transition, blah, blah, blah. But this number here, can you see it? This is the number for what our gigatons of emissions were in 1995, 29.
So you're sharing a paper. I say that because, I mean, you know, that video will be also an audio podcast. So I want to be sure that the people just listening to us understand. So you're showing a paper with a 29 on it, right?
Yeah. And that was in 1995.
I guess it's 1995.
Yeah. Now imagine, that's the gigatons of emissions we were doing in. And that's the first date. I've chosen that date because that's the first date of COP. That's the first COP was in that year. And then people talk about the transition. Now I'm gonna slide to the end of my pack. I mean, again, and this is today, we're at 42. So in 2023, we did 42 gigatons. And people are talking about a transition. Now, if you're talking about a transition, it means that you're moving away from fossil fuels. But we're not moving away. We go from 29 to 42. But people upset, they just use the word transition, like, but it's not happening. Now, you don't get that, you don't understand that, and I could do, 29, 30, 32, 30, like the numbers, they just go up. But until you have a systems view, you don't see that that notion of transition is a myth. Of course, we absolutely need a transition, and we need one which is rapid, but it is not happening. So in a classroom, people talk about, in geography teachers, they often talk about the energy transition. Let's
just stop you, because that depends very much also on the place on Earth, because there are places where emissions are going down. That's also true.
Right. And again, at a systems level, these numbers are the conclusion at a global level. So globally, they're going up. And yeah. And so you always have to have a systems level. The example that I give most often is the one with temperature. Students don't understand temperature at a systems level. They only understand it like hotter days or more extreme weather. But you've got to understand temperature like a human body. That a fever of 2 degrees for the system is bad news. And 4 degrees for the human system is hyperpyrexia. You're going to die. So until you bring things to a systems level, you can get away with not framing problems correctly. And the Green Comp framework all insists on this. You've got to frame problems right. And if you don't, you've got to do that with proper systems level understanding.
Thank you. It's very clear. So if I understand correctly, your three pillars, maybe I'm wrong, but I also recognize a bit the knowledge, skills, and attitudes in a way via these pillars. Yeah. And if I think about what you were telling me, which is very, very interesting, of course, insisting very much on the systemic dimension of that crisis, meaning that we've got to understand and have a full view, of course, on what's happening, and also working really together, bringing the knowledge from here and there. If we turn that into the education milieu, that means that the teachers have got to work to get that. We certainly and definitely need philosophy teacher, but also bio teacher, and we even need more these teachers working together. Do you agree? Yeah. And how do you do that in the Climate Academy?
Yeah, that's definitely just as students don't have a full view. It's also true for teachers. I don't say that in any patronizing way. You know, I only found out by chance, you know. So teachers also have to have a systems view. And that is a problem. Like if you're a science teacher, you're not used to dealing with political issues. And if you're politics or, you know, moral teacher or geography, you're not necessarily fully informed about the science. And so we do have a fragmented silo educational system. So yeah, we've got to get, the only answer to that is we've got to get behind teacher training. You know, we've got to put it as a priority to make teachers informed so that when they get points raised in a classroom, the teachers themselves can sustain this system's perspective. So they can challenge cliches in the classroom and just keep bringing it back to a systems level. So that's really, yeah, it's absolutely crucial. And it is just a lack of education for teachers, just like it is for students. And it's not from a lack of wanting to know, you know, teachers want to know stuff, but there isn't much literature out there which gives a clear systems view. So, you know, the climate, we have a textbook, we have a, which takes it chapter by chapter, 16 chapters through the systems crisis. And that kind of picks out the main landscape, because that's the other thing which is kind of missing. Like people don't know where to look and they don't know what the main contours are in the crisis. So that's why you end up with this kind of fetishism of plastic bags and recycling. And when you look at the whole thing, we're not talking about policy, infrastructure, energy infrastructure. We're not framing the problem correctly. So if teachers are not doing it, then we don't, the students are not going to do it. So, yeah.
Thank you, Matthew. I would have a very teacher question. I'm reasoning as a former teacher I am. We understand that, I'm going back to the issue of the competences you are promoting with your students. We understand that you focus very much on action competences. You are talking about policy agency, entrepreneurship, which is one of the very interesting aspects of your Climate Academy. May I ask you, how do you assess these action competences? How do you concretely do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we have three levels. In our certificates, which are going to be ready early in 2025, we can reward people for just participating. So if you participate in an action which is systems informed, so either for your learning, you participate by joining Climate Academy programs or projects, and in terms of civic action, you participate in sharing this system's view, or you participate in an action which is systems informed and wants to leverage systems action. And then the next level up on that is like proficiency, so that you become kind of an expert, or you become confident in dealing with these things, so you can see, you can measure the relative strength of things and so on. And then the final level of this action is things like is leadership, so that you're the one that leads change. So in a very practical way, what we're doing right in 2 weeks, my Climate Academy students, we're going a trip to Italy, back to your hometown. Varese anyway. I know you lived a long time there. And those students are going to lead a week. And for the whole week, we travel there on the train. It's a green week. We eat green. We travel green. We do everything green. But the actual focus of the week is to teach students in the art school of Varese about tipping points in the climate system, and to get them to engage in an art competition, because these system crunches, they affect women more than men. So we're gonna do the systems tipping point stuff, followed by a focus on how that affects women more. And then the output then is a portrait of a woman, which is informed by all of that. And we have an artist in the school, it's a Licio Frattini. I can't say it with a nice Italian accent, but he's a female portrait artist, so he's going to help us with this. And there you can see the three levels. So bottom level is you are communicating systems crunches, participating by just doing a painting. But a level up from that, you might do something which is so good it becomes like more publicly known, so it informs the rest of the school community about this problem. And the leadership, well, that's the students from my school who are taking a week out. They're organizing all the events. They're doing all the speaking. They're right now hyperactively in a WhatsApp group organizing events all week and so on and so on. And that's leadership. So then you reward that. So they're having an impact on not just dozens of students, but in the end, probably hundreds. So then that school itself can then replicate that. They can go to their own local schools. They can travel to another city in Italy and they can do it if they want to get the leadership one. But you have to be clear about different levels of action. And of course, just to finish, like when you look at the Green Comp framework, you can't do that. You can't act in a way which is like powerfully systemically transformative if you don't have a clear map of what you're doing. If you don't see what really bites and what really is fresh and what really has traction. So again, it's pillar one, then pillar two.
Fascinating. And art and science together, which is really, really nice. So thank you for that. So we understand that all what you said about certification, we're going to follow that very closely. And I invite the audience to look at your very nice website. We will share, of course, as we always do, in the video description. So I invite you now to focus on the last question. So I said before that you founded, after a sort of epiphany, the Climate Academy in 2011. So we're talking about 13 years ago, which is a long period. So you had time to develop a lot of programs and experiments. You've got a long experience now. So based on that experience, what were the main challenges you faced or maybe are still facing today? And what should be, in your opinion, the priorities, the main issues we should focus on now when it comes to climate education?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is that we still have a very, and I've said it a few times, but so one, and that is this center of gravity towards individual actions. We've got to get beyond that. And that's still such a strong inertia in schools. So that's the first thing, but I won't go into more detail because I've already said it. The second thing is that, and we touched on this with teachers, that we still have a siloed educational program. And what's happening a lot, and this is not wrong, we're trying to improve our syllabuses. But the problem with that is you will only ever be one piece of a syllabus. The climate crisis for a geography, it will just be one moment. And that will never be okay. It will never be enough. So one of the things that I've had to, in a way, always insist on is the fact that the Climate Academy is transdisciplinary. And you can't have the whole school doing it. Like, and the thing is that just a small number of students in any one school can have a transformative impact. So, you know, 10, 12 students in one school, they follow the program, they can disseminate the information extremely rapidly into the whole. And in fact, you know, talking about tipping points and talking about the kind of systems level, the key ideas, you can deliver them pretty fast. It's not like, and once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. Once you understand that 2 degrees and 4 degrees is about pushing the entire Earth systems over an edge into irreversible cascading negative effects, feed with feedback loops and so on, then you can't unsee that. And then everything else you hear about that, you have a framework. So I think to what is critical with our appetite for reform is you don't get bogged down in slow syllabus reforms, because it takes so long to do. And if you take the science seriously, 1.5, we've only got 135 gigatons left. That's 3 years. Like, what are you going to achieve through syllabus reform in 3 years? I mean, 1.5 is cooked. But even for 2 degrees, there are 735 gigatons left. That's only 17 years. And so we've got to take that seriously. We've got to have our actions as yourself, you know, in policy. We have to take that carbon budget seriously as well. And that means you've got to, in a way, invest in the energy, because every school has got a little Greta Thunberg somewhere. There's a little kind of powerhouse teacher in every school. And if you can just give them the systems level view and the tools, these kind of green comp tools, to be able to use that knowledge, you can have a transformative impact extremely rapidly. So I think that's those are the key takeaways. And that's a fight you keep having to refight all the time. but it's working. Like we have climate academies in India now. We have about 1,000 students following it over there, and there's a lot of interest because it's very appealing to people because it's quite low cost. You just need a few, and it's Erica Chenoweth, her 3.5% transformation rule about, so any society can flip as soon as you get 3.5 level of engagement. That's the maximum you need. The civil rights movement, you only need 3.5% of the population to fully engage, and you get the Civil Rights Act. And they did it in 9 years. So, you know, people get kind of depressed. They even say, well, you know, it's a bit negative, all this, you know, all these tipping points and systems collapses. Yeah, but it's okay. You look at it and run with it.
Thank you, Matthew. So we got to get going faster and to be more flexible also in order to adapt better. Just one thing about the move we got to do from individual action to collective actions for the audience, because we had that very interesting interview recently with the lead researcher of the EuroDC report that was recently published on the showing what's happening in terms of sustainable education in the education system in Europe. And it was clearly showing exactly what you're saying, that we are rather good at tackling individual action, not that much as collective action. So we still have a lot of things to do. And I hope climate academies, as we understand, are going to flourish here and there. I thank you very much. And I wish you all the best for your future, our future.
Yeah, well said. Thanks a lot for the time.